This is HMM correspondent Sophia Kahlein, and I'm speaking with Dara Silberman from Second Street Farm in Troy, New York.
So welcome. I'm glad we could set this up to talk. So I was hoping to first learn more about the farm in general and kind of where you are, what you sell, or what you grow.
So the farm is located in South Troy. It's in the middle of the South Troy has two parts. There's the wooded part and there's the gridded part. And we're in the gridded part.
Okay.
So we're surrounded by buildings on all sides, by streets on all sides. We get plenty of people that walk by.
Nice.
And there we're growing a mix of vegetables and fruits and perennial medicinal herbs. So it's a mix of stuff. It's very, very polyculture grow order. Situation where everything's just mixed together.
Yeah.
I don't have a particular crop, and every year something else is my best crop, so I try to keep it diverse.
When you started your farm, you started this farm, right?
Yep.
Okay. When you started, did you want to put it in the gridded area? Like, were you hoping to get that kind of locale, the more attention that maybe people passing by would give it?
The farm is something that I've learned in my, all right, so I've been farming for 10 years prior to coming to Troy. I was farming for about 7 years all over this country and a couple others. And I came to Troy. I've had a lot of really horrifying, actually, labor experiences as a farm worker. I've had experiences where I've been specifically not paid for hours worked. I've been fired from jobs for demanding a work environment free of sexual harassment.
Jeez.
I've watched as farm owners have treated migrant workers like they're animals. I was done with farming, actually, because I was like, this is not, y'all can't, like, I'm never going to get access to land. I don't have enough money. I just can't do this anymore. It's too much. So I came to Troy and then kind of started this farm by accident, actually, because Troy has a series of foreclosed properties that the city owns. And those properties usually sell for pretty, I mean, in terms of buying land, it's cheap. In terms of buying wide amounts of land, like per acre, it's actually still pretty expensive, and the taxes I pay are obscene. But in terms of just being able to own anything, this was the first opportunity I'd really had. And I bought the lot that the farm is on. The purchase price was $300, closing costs and everything included. I think I spent about between $1,000 and $1,200. So most of that all goes to the city.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the first piece of land I was ever able to own. I technically purchased it with two other people who had no interest in farming. And then afterwards I was like, guys, I'm just going to turn this into a farm and you should sell me your pieces of this, like, you know, 25 by 100 lot that we own together. So that's how that happened, really.
Cool.
I didn't intend for it to be in any particular area. I was just really excited that I had a spot that no one was going to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
But those things kind of ended up being good. So there's, you know, a lot of the problems that farms that I worked on in the past had was they either were wholesale farms and they just sold huge amounts of food to single buyers for extremely low prices, or they were retail farms where they sold less food for a higher price at a market.
Okay.
Both models, a lot of farms I worked for struggled for clients and for customers and just to make money and to avoid having food rot in their fields. I have the opposite problem. I have so much exposure to people that I can't grow enough to feed all of those people. So
yeah.
And that happened after my first season. And the second season, so many people signed up for a CSA that I was partnering with other farms to be able to supply it.
When I was researching more about CSAs, I read that sometimes farms do partner up either to share like a variety of different foods that they're growing or just kind of to like boost the production, I suppose, of whatever you've got.
That's part of one of my, if I think about like long-term goals, definitely doing a cooperative venture is a huge part of it. I think that it doesn't make sense for small farms to compete against each other. Competition is a capitalism tool, and it sounds good when we think about it from like the training that we all have as American citizens.
Yeah.
But or just, you know, people that grow up in America. In reality, it doesn't help farmers, and it doesn't actually serve the consumers. Farmers are already trying to grow the best food they know how to grow. Yeah. They're not doing it because, and in fact, the food that you find in larger institutions, that's not the case. Those are institutions where they're trying to grow as much food as possible to make as much money as possible.
Yeah.
This consumer at the very end of it isn't served by any of this competition. So I would like to see larger and larger farming cooperatives form where farmers can actually unite in their power with each other. And especially for people, and then it creates pathways for people like myself who have a lot of skills and training and who are like, well, maybe I'll go get a job doing not farming because this is not, I have no opportunity to get into a place where I have self-determination. So even in my position right now, I'm looking to acquire more land so that I can have a full-time livelihood doing food production here in Troy. So I have a couple other lots. They're not suitable for row cropping or vegetable crops, but they can be over the course of time converted into something useful.
Yeah, it would take a bit to break into the ground around there, I'm sure.
Well, it's like a matter of, the garden that I had was already cleared. And even though the soil on the garden was, I didn't test it. I just assumed that it was trash. and so I built a lot of soil that I made from compost scraps from around the city. So that's all kind of like built up. So most of it.
So you didn't really dig down and then kind of fill in with.
On certain spots in the lot, I did. It's kind of like a height advantage thing. So the stuff that's on the south end of the garden, generally that's where I put. I wanted to raise that up just because there was. The soil got even weirder over there, and it was actually harder to dig in it. But on one side of the garden, it was just this clean fill that had been dumped on the lot after the building there burned down in 1987. That's why I assumed it was all trash, because there had been a building that had an arcade in the back. And I was like, arcade that burned down probably isn't – there's probably nothing good in there.
No.
Lots
of leftover scraps of whatever.
Oh yeah, I'm sure like the screen melting down is just full of trash that I don't.
Yeah.
So it just depends where in the lot. Some of the beds are dug like a foot or two into the ground, and they're much lower, so I could not use as much building material to build them up. And then there's other beds that they're you know a foot and a half, 2 feet high because I didn't want to disturb the soil too much. Because you know when you disturb soil. There's probably like a layer of organic matter just over the last 40 years or so that's collected on top of the soil after the building burned down. So it's kind of protecting you from whatever heavy metals or other contaminants might be in there. Once you start digging and disturbing that soil, now you're just spreading it around ambiently. So yeah, you have to. So I tried to keep as much undisturbed as I thought was going to be contaminated. But the places where I found that I was just like, this is clearly fill that somebody dumped here. Like I dug that out. Yeah. And I used a lot of that soil, like the subprime stuff, to fill beds around the outside of the garden where I grow berries. Because berries, you don't have to be concerned about contamination. For most fruit and crops, you're not actually concerned about the contamination in the fruit.
Okay.
So I grow all kinds of fruit in the subprime soil, especially things like raspberries that are really aggressive and don't care if the soil's crappy.
We have raspberries here. They are just trying to spread all the time.
Yeah. And so I try to put things that want to spread in really subprime soil. Like I have Jerusalem artichokes and a bunch of subprime soil on the outside just so they spread. And, you know, I can take, if people want raspberry plants, once the patch kind of fills in, I can cut canes out of there for them. People can come by and pick the fruit. I don't have to do all the picking.
And that concludes part one of my interview with Dara Silberman. Tune back in next broadcast for part two of this interview as we discuss community-supported agriculture.